Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, July 26, 2009. It is now 7:01 p.m. Daylight, Central Daylight Time, in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620 or email us anytime, comments at libertytalkradio.com. I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, my2centsonline.com. That's my2centsonline.com. That two is a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on ContraryInvestorsCafe.com. And this evening, we're going to have a visionary and the founder of the 2B Foundation. And please go to their website also. It's the letter 2 as well, surprisingly. Letter 2B as the letter B. I'm sorry, the number 2, the letter B, foundation.org. And we'll be talking more about what that foundation's mission is and what they are attempting to accomplish. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, folks, soon we'll have Mr. William Linhart calling in. Dr. William Linhart. He is the founder of the 2B Foundation, and their mission is to attempt to establish elder care on a private basis that is amenable not only financially to other people, but to the elderly, but also to the elderly themselves and how they care for themselves. This is a monumental effort. It's very, very interesting. You know, but it touches on absolutely every aspect of our political spectrum. Every aspect of the way we look at government and what government should and should not be doing. Their perspective is so libertarian, so logical, but so radical when you consider relative to what we've been doing for decades. You know, and let me give you an example while I'm waiting for him to call in. You know, I remember about 50 years ago, there was a talk show host, and I, for the life of me, cannot remember his name, but he was before Jack Parr. So we are talking about 50 years ago, 45, 50 years ago. And I recall, and this was brand new to television. This is when television was black and white, you know, and they had a person sitting on a stage in this big chair, and he was sort of a TV talk show host, and he would talk the issues. And this is monumental. This is groundbreaking. And a woman got up to ask, and he solicited questions from the audience. A woman got up and said, I have a question, Mr. I can't remember his name. And she said, I'm only a housewife. However, and he stopped her right there. And he said, don't ever say that again, and I never want to hear that again. You are only a housewife? And then he went on to describe the responsibilities of a housewife. They trump any job that we have out there. And he was absolutely correct. That is such an incredibly important job and actually is the foundation, the cornerstone of our society. It's the actual fabric. It's the actual fabric of our society. And here we are, you know, saying, I'm only a housewife. When you think about it, a housewife is what? She's responsible for raising children, no easy task. She's a financial manager. She's an inventory manager. She's a manager of everything. And she's only a housewife. And we're going to talk more about that. And we're going to bring these old-fashioned definitions back into light and see how they really should fit into society and how we strayed away from them. Oh, we had a call in, and our, I think our host, our guest called in, but he's gone. Bill, if you're out there and you've called in, here you go. Let's try you one more time. Bill, is that you? Bill? Bill? Bill, you're on the air. Bill, I can't hear you. Uh-oh. We have a phone feed problem. Oh, boy. We have a problem. I think our guest is trying to call in. For some reason, we're not connecting. Let's see. All right. Everything seems to be working properly on this end. Don't tell me we have a technical problem. Here we go. Let's try this one more time. Bill, is that you? Bill?
Yes, Joe.
Oh, fine. We were having a feed problem. Was the problem on your end or our end? Do you have any idea?
I had difficulty calling in.
Okay, well, you called in before, and I was trying to get you on the line, but then you disappeared. And that's why I was wondering about that.
Well, that's technology for you.
Very good.
I'm here now.
We will never know, Bill, and that's one of the mysteries of life. I was just introducing you and just talking about some of the concepts that you broached in the earlier broadcast. But since you are so much more eloquent and intelligent than I am, and so much more well-versed in this, I will let you take over.
Well, I don't know about that, Joe. I don't think I'm the brightest bulb in the box, but I have put a lot of work into the issues of quality of life on the continuum of aging, and where I think we left off last week and what we've been talking about pretty much is building the rationales for a solution,
right,
as well as looking at the history of how the this dilemma has occurred in that's caused what I think of as an aging crisis, where what we've done as a society by delegating away care of people at all ages, at the same time we've become comfortable with the idea that there are age-determined expectations that have been made for us that really are not of our own making, so that our society basically has an expectation that's based on a formula that was derived at by the U.S. government in the form of the Social Security Administration Act, and there is a check or a reward of some sort that is forthcoming at a certain point in each and every person's life. And so that more or less set the stage for everybody to think in terms of a time to get off of their livelihood production years and retire. Retirement's a fairly new idea, I might mention. There was no concept of retirement in the 1800s or 1700s. This is totally an innovative thing, phenomenon strictly of the 20th century.
Right.
And it hasn't worked well, but we'll get into that in a minute. And it hasn't worked well for all the reasons we've talked about, the fact that we've created what I call age-determined expectations. In other words, we've decided what you're going to do, how you're going to act, and how much money you're going to make in your final years.
Right.
And as we were looking at all the problems and understand how these problems developed over the 20th century, we started to look at solutions. And what's interesting is that the pathway to the solutions was not direct. You know, first of all, my background was not specifically in economics, so I didn't really understand a lot of the economic issues early on. That came with practice, understanding, and study. But as we were working to develop a solution, the first place we naturally would look is try to work within the system. So the system, as it was designed, was a caregiving model. That was where we delegated away care to strangers. And since that model had been established as a for-profit industry in the early 70s called long-term care, my colleagues and I at Johns Hopkins University, the Senior Housing and Care Department at Hopkins, which was focused on long-term care, we worked very carefully with them for a long time, looking at the long-term care industry to try to see if, in fact, the problems that we were looking at, which was enormous stress, unusual levels of anxiety, depression among elder people, were somehow a cause of this model. And somehow, as we looked at it, we came up with the conclusion that the long-term care industry was not the solution. In fact, it was an industry that was plagued by pretty much four problems. Enormous abuse and neglect,
right?
Because what we've done in that industry is we've placed people in the hands of strangers, and we've put one at-risk group in charge of another. People from disadvantaged backgrounds typically take low-income, minimum-wage jobs, and that's who we put in charge of taking care of mom and dad. So it wasn't unusual to walk through a number of long-term care facilities and see elder people basically pharmacologically incarcerated by drugs, were strapped into chairs in front of television sets, and they would spend endless hours in these positions.
Right.
This was not uncommon, even in the so-called best nursing homes. In the best assisted living facilities, we saw this over and over again.
Right.
So we thought the problem was a problem that had to do with caregiving initially.
Yeah.
We thought that we had to change the culture of caregiving. So we developed early on a very detailed way of retraining the culture of caregiving, and actually created a patent that that basically develops a way of looking at the long-term care industry from the inside rather than from the outside, in a way that what we would be able to deliver would be a training program that would be delivered through technology directly to members or people who are staffing the long-term care industry. What that would have accomplished is if we could have made a meaningful change in the risk factors inside of long-term care. And the risk factors are really four things again: abuse and neglect, absenteeism, and turnover. They were the four drivers of all the problems in the long-term care industry when you boil it all down.
Right.
And what we would be able to do essentially through changing that culture would be to deal with those four issues. And we felt that by doing that, we would be able to address virtually all of the issues of mom and dad when they were in a caregiving environment. Well, that wasn't sufficient. And the more we looked at it, the more we realized that that would have been a mistake. That, in fact, the long-term care industry was a byproduct. As a matter of fact, it was another problem itself, institutional care, which we've talked about earlier. And so we started down the pathway of wondering what would happen. What do people really want? Do they really want to go into an institution? Is this something that people sit down when they're in their 50s and say, gee, you know, we're going to have to save a lot of money, and one of these days we're going to have sufficient money in our bank account to be able to pay our way into a continuing care retirement community, and that's going to be the way we're going to be able to help our families, because they won't have to worry about us anymore.
But my wife says the same thing, though. But you know, Bill, my wife has mentioned that, you know, and she said, I'm telling you, I mean, but everyone thinks that way today because of the structure that we're under.
And we've become, again, expected to do that, and as part of the regimented routine in our society, that basically we are no longer want to be a burden to our kids. Something that nobody in the entire history of the world would have said, but today you hear it all the time, and it's been part of the agenda to get elder people out of the workforce and into what we call retirement. And retirement means caregiving, means giving up loss of control.
Right.
means a number of things that just aren't good, and all the emotional consequences that come, we thought initially were a consequence of bad caregiving, having a high turnover rate,
right,
and the very severe risk of a staff of strangers who really didn't care.
Right. Bill, we have a caller. Yeah. Would you like to take that caller now?
Yes, absolutely. Sure.
Okay. Caller, you're on the air. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Your first name and where you're calling from.
Barbara. I'm from Oklahoma.
Okay. What's your name, please?
Barbara.
Okay, Baba.
Barbara.
Barbara, okay. What's your question or comment, please?
Well, I just wanted to say that I thought that nursing homes are detestable. I've been in many of them all my life, and I just think that they're horrible. Anything that would do away with nursing homes, I just think we should do that.
So you're defending the life in a nursing home. You think they do well, right?
No, they do horrible.
Oh, they're horrible. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. Okay.
Horrible.
Okay, they're horrible. All right, that's been my experience when I've been in there. Okay. Bill, would you like to comment on that? Or is that your comment, or do you have a question for our guest?
Well, she's speaking exactly to the choir.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Barbara. I think you've made an absolutely good point.
Yeah.
And in fact, when you consider the fact that what the symptoms are that we see in nursing homes is pervasive isolation, extreme emotional consequences, broad increased need for support, which is the first thing people need. And the more you need support, the more you need support, if you know what I mean. In other words, it feeds on itself. And then the final piece of this is financial desperation.
Right.
So these are the real symptoms we see when we analyze what's going on with a person in a long-term care environment.
Okay.
Yeah. And pretty much the causes, again, just to list them, is loss of control, sense of dependency, entitlements, which are basically money, which rewards our behavior of going into nursing homes, delegation of our lives away to strangers, institutional indifference, which is basically what you find in all institutions. Nobody really cares about you there. And ultimately, financial decline.
Right.
I mean, it's a rapid decline in financial capacity because of the cost.
Right.
Nothing else. So, if anybody on this, if anybody caller wants to defend the long term care industry, I'd love to hear from them.
Okay, callers, you're listening and you have the number 646-652-4620. You know, I often wondered, Bill, what motivates anyone to take a job in a long-term care facility or in a nursing home. I mean, that to me has got to be, I mean, unless you're so altruistic, you know, you want to save the world, it just seems that had to be, has to be one of the worst jobs in the world.
Well, in fact, if you consider that is a supported by the fact that of all the industries in the world, the one industry that has the highest turnover and highest absentee rate of any industry, virtually any industry, is the long-term care industry.
Right.
And in fact, the rate for people who are staffing the long-term care industry is 70%. 70%.
My goodness, yeah.
Is an incredibly high figure. And administrators, people who administrate the long-term care industry, the rate of turnover is 100%.
Well, you know, at a time when you need someone. I'm sorry.
Can you imagine a worse job than being in charge of a long-term care facility and when the phone rings, the only thing that comes in from family are complaints?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Nobody's calling. So it's a job that has put a lot of people at risk, and in fact, the whole purpose of setting up the Senior Housing and Care Department at the Johns Hopkins University was specifically to deal with the issue of administrators creating a staffing model which would have a better chance of success in what is arguably one of the most miserable jobs you can possibly have.
Right. At a time when the type of care that you need is really loving care, understanding. You need to understand the needs of the person, and yet they get people who are working there who have basically no training. They're uneducated, basically. I mean, they just, anybody who'll take the job, they'll take in. And you have the least qualified people tending to those people who need the most care. And it just seems like a total mis-equilibrium. You know, there's nothing right about that at all.
And in fact, the former head of the American Healthcare Association, Dr. Paul Wilgang, who I know very well, would say that the assisted living facilities, which are a step prior to the nursing homes, are just as bad as the nursing homes. He says that the only difference is that the assisted living facilities are nursing homes with chandeliers.
I know. I visit them because my wife has some patients, many patients that are now in assisted living, communities, if you will, and some of them incredibly expensive, and they're beautiful. They're like cruise ships, these places, and I just dislike going there. I just dislike going to every single one of them. And I can tell you some stories, because I used to sing barbershop quartet, and we used to donate our time and go to the nursing homes and sing, Valentine's songs and stuff like that, and the old songs, and they wouldn't let us go. They just loved it so much, and we felt so badly leaving. I told them I can't do it anymore. It was emotionally, I couldn't do it anymore, unfortunately. But, all right, back on track.
Well, if you think about long-term care, basically what it is, it's standardized living that's regimented.
Yeah.
And how many people, if you stop to think about it, if people were to just stop and think about it, how many individuals would like to live in an environment that's like an Army boot camp for the remainder of their life?
Right, right.
When the dinner bell rings and you don't show up for dinner, you don't eat.
That's right.
Everything is timed.
That's right.
It's a regimented existence. And it's indifferent to your needs. There are attempts right now, probably as a consequence of some of the work that I've done, to bring attention to this issue. And so the long-term care industry you'll read about, if you go to our website, to our news page, which is updated every day, you'll see that there is sensitivity now in the industry to its image of being institutional, and there are attempts, at least, to try to change that. But they're cosmetic only.
Right. Well, I was in the assisted living or the retirement home that's very close to my home is probably one of the most expensive, that you can imagine. It has absolutely everything. It has chefs, several dining rooms. It's gorgeous. The place is just wonderful. And yet, I was really surprised when I was visiting one of my wife's patients that became a friend because we've known for so many years, and he's there now, and I go there once a week and just say hello to him, see how things are going. And I showed up close to 5 o'clock, and he says, "I'm sorry, I have to go eat." And he said that if I don't go now, I don't eat. And I thought, this place, they must pay $10,000 a month to be in this place. It's incredibly expensive. And yet, if he didn't get to the dining room on time, he didn't eat. And I was shocked at a place like this that would be so expensive. Some of the oil company, I won't mention any names, but some of the, and you will know the names, if oil company executives live there that are retired, the founders of some of the smaller oil companies that you'd be familiar with if I mentioned their names. And I met them there. Sat at the dining room table with them when I was invited there. And can you imagine, that's the type of caliber, the expense of this place. And yet if you missed dinner, if you were late, you didn't eat. But you're absolutely right, and I was shocked.
Basically, the industry is also plagued, by the tort environment, which, of course, is the attorneys who are hungry for lawsuits.
Yeah.
And there's no more rich environment than long-term care. The elder care attorneys of this country have a rich source of opportunity, because the abuse and neglect are at legendary levels.
Right.
So what's happened is the cost of the nursing home has been driven up by liability insurance to such an extent that in some states, and this was even back in the early part of the turn of the century, 2002, 2003, the liability insurance for a bed in a Florida nursing home was in the range of $10,000 a year.
Yeah.
Well, that's incredible.
Right.
I mean, imagine paying that for car insurance.
Right.
And this is just to ensure the liability of the risk of the nursing home against the high incidence of inevitable abuse and neglect claims.
Right.
So when you add all that together, a nursing home has such a tax on its cash flow that it has to maintain roughly an almost 90% occupancy rate just to break even financially.
Right.
So that means if it falls below that rate, which is often the case, the decision by an administrator is whether he can afford to send out the laundry that day or feed the residents.
Right.
Because he doesn't know, that those decisions are all cost. Basically, he's always manipulating and juggling cost. So what do you think the level of care is just from the institutional side? And the food, the quality of the food,
right?
The quality of the out services,
right.
None of it is good. It's,
yeah.
It's all at risk.
Yeah,
and it's a model that is that has been on the brink of bankruptcy. Matter of fact, the large conglomerates typically are in and out of bankruptcy quite frequently. Sunrise, Genesis out of Pennsylvania, which has about 400 assisted living and nursing homes across the country. So what sane person would make a rational decision to put their life at risk, all of their money, the balance of what they have in their estate, into an institution that is guaranteed to drive up their stress, sense of loss of control, and when they're at true risk, be subject to abuse?
Right. What's the solution, Bill? What's the solution to all of this? I mean, how do we turn this thing around when, you know, it's no longer Little House on the Prairie where Grandpa and Grandma have their bedroom in the back and they're still working the place and the grandchildren are there and there's family support. And they're basically a self-contained unit in a way, where we've divorced ourselves from that nearly 100%, and we're so happy they're Social Security now. We don't have to worry about Mom and Dad. That's their problem, you know, because they have Social Security, and I can move to California and do my thing. I mean, how do we turn this and the mentality that we have of the woman in the house who should be raising kids? Give their kids, and I'm sorry, I'm going to get on a tangent, but give their kids to a daycare center while they go to work, so they can bring money into the house. You know, I think the whole thing is just discombobulated. But how do we sort of fix this thing? I can't even put my hands around it at all. Where do we start?
Well, where we started is understanding that caregiving is only part of the problem,
right?
And that the real issue, as we identified it and we've talked about on this show, is that as we age in this society, and the way we set adrift our elders into life rafts and they go away from the mothership at age 65, the real issue is the loss of financial integrity that increases over the balance of one's life.
Right.
And the two biggest contributors to the loss of financial integrity are the cost of housing and health care,
right,
which basically the long-term care industry was set up to solve and does not solve.
Right.
So if the issue were loss of financial integrity, and if we could change that circumstance, our hypothesis, basically, our idea here is that we would be successful if we could make you financially whole through the balance of your life, to change the circumstances of depression, anxiety, and stress, and to be able to provide a meaningful, if we could provide at the same time a meaningful opportunity for health care.
Right.
That where you would not have to worry about outliving your money in
right.
your lifetime. That change would dramatically improve quality of life.
Right. Bill, we have a caller. You want to take that caller now, or you want to wait a while, or what?
Yeah, yes.
Okay,
I'd be happy to take it.
Okay. Caller, area code 218. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Yes, my name is Brandon.
Brandon?
I'm calling from Minnesota.
Minnesota. Okay, Brandon, your comments or question, please, for our guest.
Well, Joe, let me tell you, I've been listening. I think this is the third week I've listened. I don't know how long y'all been doing this, but my question is, and I guess I'm just trying to say it this way, when can we get to the chase? When we can figure out what we're going to do here? I think we've talked, you guys keep talking about the problems with Social Security and long-term health care and nursing homes, but what's the solution? You know, for three or four weeks we've been listening now, so I want to know what the solution is.
It's a good question, and we're going to talk about the solution right now. And if the problem were financial, the solution is also financial. And in giving you the solution, I'll give you a little bit of background on me personally, which I'll share with you. And that has to do with the discovery and the pathway. And that is my family, when they came to this country, started a life insurance company in Philadelphia, and it grew to about 400 offices and then moved to Chicago and expanded. And so as a little kid, I was exposed to the CEOs and the highest level people in the thinking and the strategies and the business of life insurance, which is a financial industry. And that had a profound effect on me as a kid, and we were thinking about a solution and knew we had to change horses, we went into the field of economics, and we started to look at the issue of how life insurance might be a way to create an asset class that in a very meaningful way could carry the day, because if we were able to insure lives at a later age in life, would we be able to attract investment capital or capital of any kind that would be meaningful enough to be able to provide housing and health care, not as a cost to elder people, but as a benefit, as a grant, through a structure that we would erect called a private foundation, which is what the 2B Foundation is. So we spent a number of years working with AIG, at the highest levels, all the way up to the president of AIG, Ty Sagalow, in the new products division in New York. He was the president of that division, and a number of people at the Northwest Mutual and Prudential and another number of companies. And we started to work out what we thought was a pathway, and in fact, it is a pathway. And what was very interesting is that what gave us validity for looking at life insurance was a parallel industry that we became very close to. In fact, we even became so expert in understanding life insurance that we were asked to write a number of professional papers for the life insurance industry, which some of which are still published on their websites. And the long and the short of it is there was an industry that started in the late 1980s called life settlements. It was pretty much started by a small group of individuals who at that time didn't have a clear sense of what they were doing, but what they were doing is they were working with people at the upper end of the continuum of aging. In other words, people 65 years of age and older who were closer to the end of their life, and they were purchasing life insurance policies on people who were elders. And so I think it's arguable that what happened with that industry over the last 20 years is that they have clearly demonstrated to the entire world a model that is an investment model whereby when an individual sells an insurance policy to an investor, and that investor buys a large number of policies and combines them into a portfolio, those policies, because people are closer to the end years of their life, those policies behave like a promissory note, a 10-year promissory note.
Right.
So
yeah.
If you assume that the average mortality on people over 70 is 10 years, which is about right, then you also have the capacity to create what we call financial prediction. And financial prediction is based on the one thing that the life insurance industry does is very well, is that they spend a great deal of time and money every single day employing a large force of people who do nothing but statistics, which result in what we call mortality tables. And the mortality tables are within a 3% error of margin of error, and give a specific ability of an individual who wants to invest in policies, insurance policies, at the later ages of life, a sense of confidence that he would not have in any other asset class. It's the only asset class, if you stop and think about it, where there is a fixed value, which is a value of that life insurance policy that does not change over the life of that individual.
Right.
And that the only thing that's required to maintain the integrity of that asset or that insurance policy is the same thing you would have with your house. If you have a house, you have to pay a mortgage. With a life insurance policy, you pay a premium.
Right.
So what the foundation has worked out, this is the answer to your question, is a way to use that model, which is life settlement model, by purchasing life insurance policies on people 65 and older, and being the owner, the applicant, and the beneficiary of the policy, providing back to mom and dad a house, housing, and health care benefits for the balance of their life. And that basically is the model. And when mom and dad die, the foundation recovers the costs that we've laid out during their lifetime to provide housing and health care at no cost. We recover the benefits from the mortality benefits that are collected from the insurance industry.
All right, Bill, I'm late on station identification. Just let me break in for a moment, please. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We have as our guest this evening Dr. William Lenhart. We're talking about the elder care crisis and the solution this evening. Please call in with your question, 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. We'd love to hear from you. Of course, you can send us your email anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. Bill, aren't you talking about this very similar to a... those mortgages, reverse mortgage type thing? Is this very similar?
No. Here's the difference. The what we do is we analyze what the needs are for an individual based on an expectation of their mortality, their life, looking at health issues and a number of other issues. We look at what it takes to support their housing. And the foundation, in fact, is involved in this is the model. We will be approaching a like-minded community such as a church, a civic club, a yacht club. It could be any group where there are like-minded people, because one of the things as we age, what we don't like to do is learn new tricks and be involved in experiments.
Right.
So what we will do is we will make an offer to a group of like-minded people that organization will have the benefit brought forward by our foundation of housing and health care for all members of that group who are over 65 years of age. And we will build communities that will be intimate in the sense that they'll be smaller communities, not these giant communities that you see in Arizona with 1,000 houses for elder people and a little town built. No, this is a community that would be built close to where you've spent your life, in close proximity to your shopping and all the things that are familiar.
Okay.
We will build you a 2,000 under roof, a 2,600 square foot house, 2-car garage in a neighborhood, a very high quality house that will be designed in such a way that you will be able to age in place more successfully. And that house will be provided to you and your wife and to at least 30 other couples. We would build a minimum of 30 houses, a maximum of 45 houses in a neighborhood. And that those couples would enjoy that house as joint tenants for life.
Okay.
They would have all the privileges of home ownership of that house that would be in a neighborhood of like-minded people who form a support group. Additionally, the foundation would provide the health care support that's necessary above and beyond any existing insurance programs or Medicare or any of the programs that are out there right now. We
right.
would make sure there was a five-star health insurance program. All health would be provided in the home. Mom and dad would stay in the house. They would die in their own bed. They would have health care provided by in-home health care people who would be brought forward and would be trained by the foundation through the program we were just talking about a few minutes ago. We have a patented approach to being able to change the culture of caregiving, and we will institute that. And the most important thing is the community gets to elect an individual who will be their project manager.
Okay.
And the project manager would be, we would pay for a physician or a geriatrician to leave their practice, which they probably don't like now, which is probably 2,500 or 3,000 patients, people they don't know,
right,
and don't really care about. They will be leaving what is arguably nothing more than a billing office with a few examining rooms,
right,
and they would be able to practice medicine again in an intimate environment with a community of like-minded people paid for by the foundation, where the community has chosen to hire a physician to be able to oversee all health care and caregiving in that community.
Right.
We have a self-contained community now, a physician who's who has a professional building on the grounds. There would be all the opportunities we would offer would include wellness, health care, benefits, exercise, all these things would be encouraged. And what we want to establish is we want to erect each and every individual to be captain of their own ship.
Right.
The foundation will not tell you how to live. All we will do is pay for it. All we do is enable you and facilitate your ability to restore your quality of life and to live the last years of your life without worry or stress about the two main drivers that cause the main cause of stress, anxiety, and depression, which is the loss of financial integrity. And at the very least, you will not have the issue of having housing or health care, the two main costs that you're faced with for the balance of your life. Now, think about what that does also for your community. We have right now the worst health economic crisis in the history of the world, probably. It's gigantic. Well, a community of elder people, typically elder people, are savers and hoarders. They save every penny. They hoard their money. They're afraid to spend it, afraid to buy a new car, afraid to take a trip. And this whole, the fear is predominantly driven by something very real, the fact that they're out there on a limb, no way to recover their livelihood.
Right.
They've been conditioned and trained by a society that thinks of institutions as the way to go, and they're not supposed to be a burden to their families. So here they are in the last years of their life, suddenly financially whole. How is that going to change the behavior economically of the people who live in this community?
Right.
Besides the fact that they no longer have any emotional problems that are such as stress, anxiety, and depression, they're going to become spenders. They're going
right.
to be able to access your community and become economically integral with the community in such a way that they will help to raise the standard of living of everyone else by being able to continue to engage themselves in their same shopping habits and patterns, their same restaurants, and be able to facilitate a rise in the economic circumstances of their community.
Right.
This is a huge change.
Oh, yeah. They can spend.
And the asset. And the asset class is something we all own in common, the value of our own lives.
Right.
Well, all insurances is a way to recognize that value.
These people, then, who are in this program, they can spend their own money as they please. I mean, their money's not tied up. It's not put in escrow or given to anyone. The only thing is that there's a beneficiary, and the beneficiary is the financial organization that is paying, you know, for these services, the housing and medical services for them. Am I correct?
The foundation owns the insurance policy,
right,
just as a life insurance investor would own a life insurance policy.
Right.
The difference is, the life settlement industry is only interested in profiting themselves. The elder foundation, 2B Foundation, is interested in providing benefits back to the people who are living in the community. So we are, our interest, our agenda, our mission is to restore quality of life,
right,
and to use the money that is, that would be captured by that insurance policy during your life, so that you will be able to have housing and health care for the rest of your life and not have that worry.
Okay, let's take another caller, Bill, okay? Area code 215, this is Liberty Talk Radio. Thank you for calling. Your first name, where you're calling from, your questions, and or your comments, please.
Johnny, and I'm in Texas.
Okay, your question, please. Thank you for calling.
Well, I just want to know how I can get... How could I get in one of those houses? I'm that age. How can I do that?
Well, the first step is to become a member of the foundation, and because we are active with our members. Let me tell you, we were on the phone with a conference call this past week. We had all the members available. Our conference lines will take up to 400 people, and we are interested in your quality of life right now. And so where this is going to go is group by group. What we are looking to do is be able to engage a conversation and dialogue with our members to decide what their issues are, where they are living, and to be able to get to the point where we have the knowledge of being able to facilitate your community, a like-minded group in your community. Perhaps your name is John. If you belong to a church or to a like-minded group, we would be interested in being able to talk to you about that and being able to bring forward other members of your group. It also, we have what's called the Elder Care Check program, which is supplementary to the housing and health care, so that what we would be able to do is it would be able to provide benefits and services that would provide cost benefits in the area, particularly of healthcare, right now, so that we would be able to write insurance policies on the lives of members and be able to provide benefits back. And that program is something we are expecting to launch within the next several months. So that what our hope is to be able to embrace every single member, be able to provide a catch basin of services, at the very least, healthcare services, where there is a real sense of care and concern about your health, well-being, and eventually be able to provide housing as well. Obviously, the limitations that we have would be we would only be able to roll out this program at the capacity of the funding that we're generating right now. We do have a significant amount of funding, which will increase as a consequence of each one community will pay for another, and we have right now four communities planned to start this year.
Okay.
So by getting involved with this, that would be a first step.
Right. Bill, at this point, then someone would have to, well, first of all, your conference calls, are they the same time every week so people would know if they wanted to call in and listen in? When are they?
They're available only to people who have actually signed up for membership.
Okay.
We have a newsletter that goes out every single day to every single member.
Yeah.
We have a monthly newsletter that supplements that goes out once a month. We have a call-in line for crisis or any counseling or advisory services that are needed right now that's available through the membership. Doesn't cost anything. Once you've joined the foundation, that service is provided to you as part of the benefits. So in every sense, we are extremely interested in the health, well-being, comfort, and security of every single member, and in fact, every single elder person. We want to change the circumstances of your aging. We want to be able to we want to show concern for your quality of life. And what we need from you is your support, in the sense that that each person who joins and understands and embraces our message becomes part of the power we have to talk to our leaders about changing this country once and for all, and moving towards what is arguably a much more sustainable asset class that can be used for everybody, that we can eventually replace Social Security. that's where this ultimately is headed.
Now, would they have to buy a new insurance policy? Is that the way that would work?
No. No person who's a grantee of the foundation or a member of the foundation who's involved in our benefit program pays one penny for an insurance policy. The foundation pays all the costs. We arrange for the policy with a major carrier such as AIG or John Hancock, and we are the owners. We pay for the policies every year. The premiums are paid for by the foundation. We own the policies. And we also, on the basis of the dollar amount that we are facilitating in those policies, the face value insured, we will then provide benefit streams back that are consistent with the dollar amount of the insurance that we purchased.
So then you would buy,
and
just
those,
put this
those,
in.
Those are, we provide, yes, the foundation buys the policies.
Okay. So
no individual is asked to pay for anything.
Okay, let me put this in Dick and Jane language and just walk through this. So far, you would put buy a life insurance policy, for example, on me, right? And you would pay the premiums. When I kick the bucket, then the cash surrender value, or whatever they call it in the insurance industry, when the redeems that, then the foundation gets that money, and they use that money, obviously, to pay for more insurance
recover
policies and recover your cost and pay for these communities. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. All right.
We
That's
recover the cost.
Simple enough.
We call it cost recovery life insurance.
All right. Cost recovery life insurance. I like that. Hold on. We have another call. 903. Area code 903. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Thank you for calling. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
My first name is Ed. I'm calling from Texas.
Texas, okay, Ed.
I just had a question. My father, if he could not qualify for insurance, what would that do? And I mean, he has been sick, so could you elaborate on that for me?
Well, there's two answers to that. Number one, at the start, what we have is the issue of the first communities, the first two or three communities, we will have to meet guidelines that require each person to be able to meet the insurable interest and at this also be able to meet the health guidelines of the insurance industry. But what's going to happen is we're going to be insuring large numbers of people. Thousands and thousands of people are going to be insured in our programs. And what happens when we raise the number of people who are under management, in other words, the number of insurance policies that we own, we get to a point where what's called guaranteed issue. So somewhere the number, maybe 300, maybe 500 policies that we will write, at that point, people who are at risk will be included regardless of insurability. All people will be brought into the insurance program, no one will be excluded. It will work very similar to what most of you know is group insurance, which you probably have had with your employers from time to time. So we will have what's called guaranteed issue, and the idea is to insure everybody and to be able to provide this benefit to a broader and broader society. And eventually, what this program will do is the value of your own life, which is the one asset we all own in common, by demonstrating this program, and we'll talk more about this if I can get back next week, is what we'll be able to do is replace Social Security and Medicare with a far better program that's sustainable, based on the one value we all have in common, and everyone will have an equal chance for restoring the golden years.
Okay, Bill, you have to be a caller took your response off the air. Would there be a minimum age that's required? You have to be over 65, 70? What are the requirements for that?
The age is right around 65, although some groups may be younger and some may be older. We're working with the Native Americans in Canada. That group has a mortality of around a little under 10 years less than most people here in the most Caucasians. So their mortality would mean we'd be writing policies maybe in their 50s.
I
Eventually, we're looking to And eventually, we'll be, as this program unfolds, I'll be able to talk more about this later, but we'll, I'll show you how it will work for all generations.
Okay.
And the main, and I'll show you also how every person will be able to get a benefit throughout their life who participates. And I mean people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. I mean, this is a gigantic paradigm shift in economics that we are going to implement. And it's going to change countries, we believe.
Well, there doesn't seem to be any downside on my side. I mean, there's no cost out of my pocket, apparently, or am I missing something?
No cost out of your pocket. The foundation is in the business of humanitarian relief, quality of life. So, therefore, our agenda is to be able to find a way, whatever that way may be, to be able to facilitate quality of life. So what we've done is simply borrowed from another industry's experience, which is the life settlement industry.
Right.
And we're applying that model with ethics to the needs of elder people to restore their quality of life by, instead of taking the money for ourselves, giving it back to each and every person in the form of housing and health care for the balance of your life. And we know we can expand this program to satisfy the needs of countries.
Right. Well, Bill, we're almost out of time. Would you like to come back next Sunday and expand on the program?
I would love to.
Okay.
I think if everybody's interested and wants to hear me back again, I can carry this entire solution through and show how this can affect people at all ages.
Yeah, if you can give us some examples and walk through it, you know, walk through the process step by step and sort of in plain, you know, common man's English, and just say this is the way the program works, I think we'll generate some calls and interest. And when is your conference call going to be this week?
I'm sorry, Joe, you said what is the call going to be next week?
Yeah, well, when is the next conference call?
Oh, Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Central Time.
Tuesday, 7 Central.
Tuesday night, 7 o'clock Central Time. So anybody who is a member between now and then will get notice by email.
Okay.
To join us on that conference call, and we will pick up where we were this past week. We were talking about quality of life issues that the Foundation's interested in facilitating right now. So please join, and please join us.
Okay, that's great. Bill, thank you so much for being on our program. We look forward to next week's program again, and to get into the nitty-gritty of the solutions. I think this is being clarified now, to me at least, and I feel much better. I mean, I feel more competent about this program because I understand a little bit better, but I look forward to next week's program and getting maybe some examples and how this whole program would work.
And I'd be delighted to come back, and I look forward to being able to help elucidate on this issue.
Okay, Bill, thank you so much, and good night.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Wow, that's really interesting, isn't it? That's really interesting. Can you imagine someone writing a life insurance policy on you? You provide yourself housing. Beautiful. 2,500 square feet is a big house. I mean, especially for people who are in their older years, that's terrific. You don't have to pay for it. I'm signing up. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Rentshakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of Liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, and that'll be Thursday morning, 6:30. I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.